Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, folks, and a hearty welcome to our drive-in theater. We have a wonderful evening's entertainment lined up for you, one that will provide several hours of pleasurable relaxation and diversion for you and your family.
Several?
Did you fail to dress up for tonight's show? No tie, an old shirt and slacks, a house dress?
No pants.
Well, don't give it a thought. We're glad you came as you are. We just want you to enjoy yourselves. Don't forget to visit our refreshment center during the intermission or any time. You love the tasty array of snacks we have to offer. So will the youngsters. Everything is quality and so good. We hope you'll make this a weekly visit. Bring the family. Bring your friends.
Good evening and welcome to Erie House Drive-In. It's Erie House Old Timey Radio, too, at the same time. I'm Dale Kay from Spook Show, here along with...
Dan Bigley from We're Just Really Bad at Movie and Spaceship One. And we're doing some pre-celebrating for tomorrow's Vincent Price birthday. Woohoo!
Indeed, the great one, the master of horror, one of my favorite all-time horror actors. And, of course, we're doing the drive-in deal, so we've got a double feature weekend. A movie tonight and a movie tomorrow night as well. Tonight it's Dragon Wick.
Yep. And to go with that, we have a Treasury Stars on Parade, in which Vincent Price is a part. And, Dale, we have another feature in between those two. We have a Vincent Price fact or made up quiz.
Ooh, another fact or makeup quiz. I love it. We had one last weekend.
We did. One last weekend. It went over pretty... I actually took it into work and gave it to a few people. They loved it. I'm surprised how many of them didn't pass it, though. Well, I think... Because everybody knows everything about Vincent Price, right? Right? Wrong.
Well,
we'll find out last weekend.
I got burned on a couple details for the one you gave last weekend. So sometimes they're worded tricky, gang. You got to listen up.
Yep. It's sometimes it's partially true, but not completely true. Yes.
Yep.
So we're going to have fun with that in between. What's the prize? A hearty handshake and a pat on the back.
Or as Stan Lee used to call it for Marvel Comics, a no prize. You have won a no prize.
Well, I just... The pride of the knowledge that you have, that you have outshined so many people. Like, they take all these quizzes and say, if you guess this quiz right, you're a genius. Well, you can be a Vincent Price genius tonight if you pass the Vincent Price fact or made up quiz.
Yep. Brag to your friends.
That's right. They'll all be envious.
As they should. Yeah. Fumble mouth.
It should be, yeah.
Yes, sir.
Oh, my.
Vincent Price, born on the 27th in 1911. So tomorrow he would be 112 years old. Wow.
So, you know, that means, Dale, if he were alive today, he'd be dead.
Pretty much. I love his swan song appearance in Tim Burton's Edward Scissorhands back in 1990. Sort of a swan song. I mean, he's done a few things, I think, subsequent to that. Not too much, because he was getting up there already. I think he was...
I think it was the last thing he did on film. He did some voice work after that. And you know what? I read in my research for... And this isn't giving up anything because I didn't use that one, but on Vincent Price fact or made up, is that his scene in that was supposed to be much longer, but his health caused Tim Burton to cut down his lines.
Yeah. He did do a couple more things after Edward Scissorhands.
Yes.
He did a Tiny Toon voice. He did one for Heart of Justice.
Oh, stop!
Oh. Okay. Saving those facts for later. Or a quiz just got one question shorter. One of the two.
Yes,
you
it did.
Judge.
All right, everybody, go ahead, take note. There's one answer that Dale just gave you, okay?
Oh, damn it. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Maybe somebody will come in late. Maybe someone will come in late.
I guess I won't be getting the Rice-A-Roni. Hiya, Fogsbane, or I should say hi. Welcome. Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat.
The San Francisco treat. There you go.
Rice-A-Roni, the flavor can't be beat. You know I love that stuff. I love the chicken flavor.
Do you really?
Rice-A-Roni.
I haven't had the – now, whoever owned that doesn't own that now.
I don't think so.
In the days
somebody
of the
else.
Commercial.
Yeah.
I think it's a major brand bought him out.
Well, that's a shame.
From the original Rice-A-Roni owner.
Was it Chun King?
No.
Since we're back in those days, you never know.
They were, is that right?
Chun King.
Days, but... Chun King's still around, I think.
Are they still making their products? Good.
I believe so.
Yeah. Because we all know Chinese food is much better when it's prepackaged or even in the can.
Chun King, let's see. Oh, they have some of the old commercials. Chun King, the earliest brands of marketed
mm-hmm.
Chinese food in the United States.
Yep. They've been around.
They have been around. I was looking for... Wikipedia to tell us a little bit more that it's still around, but no. Pinterest, yes. Wikipedia, no.
Our dear friend Gar still not able to join us tonight, apparently, and waiting for that voice to come back, and also hoping he's feeling a lot better.
Yeah, I talked to him a little bit this week, and I really, truly miss – we used to have conversations that would last an hour or two sometimes. And that right now they're very short just because he doesn't have his voice. And he does tend to become a little ill during our conversations as well. He really wants – he misses us. He is always apologizing to me that, I'm sorry, I can't be there. Don't apologize because you're sick, buddy. You know.
That's right. You can't help that. We love
That's
you,
right.
buddy. He does listen in the archives.
We do. We can't wait for your return, but don't apologize for not being here because you're ill. Come on.
We may be
heartless, but we're not that heartless.
Yeah, we may be taskmasters, but even we have our limits. You know? Come on. I wonder who I learned that from. But I digress. We got a drive-in movie for you tonight. Again, it's a version of Dragonwick. A little disappointed that Jean Tierney is not playing the female lead like she did in the movie. I think she was a highly underrated actress and absolutely, I think, one of the most attractive women of that era.
Well, she also was with him in that Laura movie, was she not?
I believe she was.
Was that not she?
I believe she was Laura.
And in Tomorrow Night's Airy House with Vincent Price and Dana Andrews, who started. So I believe she's in that one as well. So
good.
If you miss her tonight, I think we're getting her tomorrow.
Yeah, we have a different actress playing her tonight. The female lead in Dragonwick. And this, of course, is from Lux Radio Theater, who makes Airy House Drive-In possible.
Yes.
And
for the most wonderful toilet scrubs you can get. Yeah.
That's right. And Dragonwick was originally broadcast
on October 7th of 1946.
Ooh.
Lux presents Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Well, seems like it's good time for batteries for
the
Lux
Radio Theater brings
not you
Gene
Tierney mic until I hear the
Vincent goat. Price in Dragonwick. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. William Keeley.
Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. If I should offer any one of you a kingdom, I'm sure you'd accept it. And that's how a certain section of our country was settled. Under Dutch rule in the 1600s, wealthy Hollanders were offered vast estates along the Hudson River as an inducement to come to America. Over these land grants, or patroonships, as they were called, the patroons had absolute authority, and many of them ruled until the middle of the 19th century, a unique phase of Americana that forms the background of tonight's play, 20th century's Fox screen hit, Dragonwyck. We are happy to have the fine stars of the picture, Jean Tierney in one of her greatest dramatic roles, and Vincent Price in the part that raised him to well-deserved stardom. Speaking of early Dutch settlers, I have here a snapshot of a very recent visitor from Holland. She sent it to me as evidence of how Lux Flakes can keep those neat Dutch costumes sparkling clean. And I wish that all our listeners could see the photograph itself. An attractive girl in a typical Dutch outfit, complete from large white cap to flower-embroidered yoke, I believe it's called, and apron. I'd say it was a tribute not alone to Lux Flakes, but to the discriminating taste of people who have always been world famous for their cleanliness and tidiness. New York City, 1844. In a suite at the ultra-fashionable Astor House, Elfin Wells and his daughter await the arrival of a man they've never met.
Oh, I never had such a dinner in my life, Pa. Imagine Mr. Van Ryn ordering all that food just for us.
Wasteful extravagance is what it is. And how did he know what I wanted to eat?
But there was everything you could possibly want.
Everything is what no man should ever want, Miranda.
Yes, Pa.
We'll drink our coffee later. And renting these rooms for us, I just don't understand such a man as Nicholas Van Ryn.
But what is there to understand? He wrote to us inviting me to live with his family at Dragonwyck. After all, we are related.
So distantly as to matter not at all. We've never even met him.
Then why do you feel so suspicious, Pa?
Because the wealthy affect an elegance that is against the word of God. Because he is a patroon. I'm a Yankee farmer, and we're as good and maybe better than any Dutchman on the Hudson River.
Oh, of course, Pa. But there's no harm in my being a companion to his little daughter if he and his wife so wish it.
I gave you my consent, however foolishly, and you're going to Dragonwyck. I want you to read with me, Miranda. Hand me my Bible.
Yes, Pa.
I will sing with mercy and judgment unto thee,
O Lord, will I sing.
I will walk within my house with a perfect heart. I will set no wicked things before my eyes.
I will not know a wicked person.
I had no wish to interrupt. I am Nicholas Van Ryn. Please continue.
Him that hath a proud look will not I suffer.
Mine eyes shall be upon the faithful of the land. But he that worketh deceit shall not triumph in my heart.
Well, Cousin Miranda, more coffee?
No, thank you.
You, sir?
No, thanks. Mr. Van Ryn?
Sir?
I don't know what made me think you'd be a much older man.
Does that affect your confidence in me, sir? Alexander the Great, when he was younger than I, had conquered most of the world.
Maybe if he'd been a little older, he'd have conquered all of it. What are your politics? For Van Buren, I suppose.
Van Buren is an old friend of mine. Naturally, if he's nominated, my farmers will vote for him.
Your farmers?
Yes, the tenant farmers on my land.
Tenant farmers? You mean they don't own their own land?
The land has belonged to the Van Ryns since 1630. I permit the farmers to work it. In return, they pay me tribute and a share of their produce.
But they can buy the land if they want it.
No, they cannot.
Why?
Because it belongs to me.
I'd rather own 1/2 acre of barren rock than work the richest land in the world for someone else.
I dare say we don't understand each other's viewpoint.
I dare say.
Cousin Nicholas, that music.
Is that what they call the waltz?
It sounds very much like one.
Do you dance the waltz?
Yes, Cousin Miranda, but never in public places.
Oh.
It's time for bed, Miranda. Don't forget your prayers.
I won't bar. Good night. Good night, Cousin Nick.
I'll be here in the morning at 8 o'clock. The steamboat sails at 9. At this time tomorrow, you'll be in Dragonwick.
Yes, Mr. Van Ryn.
Oh,
Yes?
Cousin Miranda, on occasion we dance the waltz at Dragonwick. Good night.
Oh, Cousin Nicholas, I just saw it. I saw Dragonwick. Oh, darling, it's like a great castle, all alone on a mountain. Oh, how can you sit there so quietly?
But why not?
I should think that seeing Dragonwick would be more thrilling to you than to anyone.
Nothing could be thrilling that is shared with so many other people.
Oh, tell me about Dragonwick. How many rooms are there?
I've never counted them.
And lots of servants.
I've never counted them either. Oh, your bonnet.
Do you mind if I keep it off just a moment? The breeze feels so wonderful against my face.
The breeze must feel very wonderful indeed with a face as beautiful as yours against it. Come, Cousin Miranda, I'd better see about your luggage. And this, Johanna, this is Cousin Miranda. Cousin Miranda... My wife.
Oh, welcome to Dragonwick, child.
It's most kind of you to let me come, Cousin Johanna.
Katrine is in bed?
Yes, Nicholas. She's asleep.
Then your meeting with my daughter will have to wait until the morning.
Shall I retire now?
Not unless you wish to.
Oh, I don't wish to. I mean, well, I'd love so to see all of Dragonwick.
I'm afraid, dear, that would take more than one evening. And more than that, too.
Still, there's no reason why Cousin Miranda should not make a start.
No, Nicholas, no. I only
Now, this room over here, for example, do you like it?
Oh, how beautiful. And a harpsichord. And that portrait on the wall. Who is she?
She was my great-grandmother, Azild.
Azild? What a strange name.
I don't know why we keep her hanging there. And that ugly old harpsichord. The servants have to be driven to dust it. You think it was going to bite them?
Azild was from New Orleans. She and my great-grandfather were married there in 1743. This harpsichord was hers.
If you'd listened to the servants, they'd have you believe she still plays it.
Fortunately, we don't listen to the servants.
Oh, no, of course not. Isn't it rather late, Nicholas?
If you wish to retire, my dear.
Yes, I think I will. Well, good night, then.
Good night, Johanna.
Good night, cousin dear.
Cousin Miranda, do you think you will be happy here?
Oh, what a question to ask.
You won't be homesick?
A little, I'm sure. But that doesn't...
And there is no one else at home? A young man, perhaps?
No, cousin Nicholas. No young man.
Well, it is getting late, and you've had an exhausting day. I'll have the housekeeper show you to your room. Her name is Magda. Good night, Miranda.
Good night, Cousin Nicholas.
You're ready, Miss Wells. I'll show you upstairs.
You're Magda?
Yes, miss. This room, it's lovely, isn't it? It's called the Red Room.
Was she very young, Magda?
Who, miss?
The lady in the portrait.
About your age?
Mistress of Dragonwick. How proud she must have been.
He never loved her. He only wanted their son. He broke her heart and drove her to...
What were you going to say?
Only what's been told for all these years. That she prayed for disaster to come to the Van Ryns and swore that when it came, she'd always be here to sing and play. She killed herself in this room, miss.
Oh, that's just kitchen gossip. I'm sure it is.
Oh, you mustn't take me seriously. No one ever does. Shall we go up now?
Thank you.
Of course, I've never heard Azild play. You won't hear her either, because you have no Van Ryn blood. But he'll hear her, the master, and so will the child, Katrine. This is your room, miss. I've lit candles.
Thank you.
Miss Wells. Why have you come to Dragon Week? Do you think Katrina's in need of a companion?
Why, I... That would be for her mother and father to decide.
Don't you think Katrina's in need of a mother and father? That was a silly question, wasn't it? Do you like it here?
Of course I do.
Of course you do. But one day you'll wish with all your heart and soul that you never came to Dragon Week.
Good night, Miss Wells.
Well, Katrine, that's enough studying for today. Just think, it's 3 whole weeks I've been here.
I'm glad you're my teacher.
I'm glad too, dear.
Papa's kind of like a teacher to you, isn't he?
He's been very kind and helpful, yes.
What's he like?
Your father.
Does he like me?
Katrine, your father and mother both love you very much.
I don't love them, I only... Look, a carriage. That must be the de Grignets. And the Count's such a funny-looking little man.
A Count? Can you see that?
Oh, yes. By tomorrow, the house will be packed with people. Papa always has a 4th of July ball for the river families after the farmers have their canette.
A ball?
Everyone will want to dance with you, Miranda.
Oh, golly, I hope so, Katrine. But what did you say the farmers did?
Canette?
What's that?
It's like a carnival. And then in the afternoon, Papa sits in a chair under a tree, and the farmers bring in their tribute.
I see.
Miranda, we could go to the canette if we hide.
But why must we hide?
Papa doesn't want me to be seen with those people.
Then we'll not go, of course.
Oh, but it's so much fun, even just watching. They dance, they have games.
We'll
see,
Katrine. Maybe if we just watch, well...
This is where I hide every year, Miranda. Sometimes after Polly, I stand at the carousel.
We shouldn't have come. It's wrong to disobey.
Hello, Katrine.
Hello, Dr. Turner.
Oh, I didn't know you were with someone.
This is Miranda Wells.
How do you do, Miss Wells?
How do you do?
Pa sent her all the way to Connecticut to be my companion.
Oh? Whereabouts in Connecticut?
Near Greenwich.
But that's all farm country.
Haven't you ever met anyone off a farm, Doctor?
Not at Dragon Week, no. Well, this seems an odd sort of place to watch to come in.
We're not supposed to see you. We're hiding from Papa.
Oh, I see. But don't worry, I'll keep your secrets. Oh, may I have the honor again, Miss Wells?
Why, yes, if you'd like.
You're sure it won't be too unpleasant?
That's a very strange thing to say.
I'm afraid it isn't. The patroon and I don't get along very well. In fact, the first thing I've ever known us to agree on is bringing you here. I think that was a fine idea.
Why doesn't he like your father, Kathleen?
Because... Pa doesn't like him either.
Why not?
Pa never says why not. But I think it's because... Hide, Miranda, hide. They're coming.
Who's coming?
Papa. Papa and the Count of Grignani.
Then, yes. I think we could even get closer, Katrine.
But why? All the fun's going to stop now. And Papa comes, that's when they pay him the money.
I still think that I'd like to see it.
Well, all right, then. Come this way, Miranda.
And we can just assume that Miranda is on her way, as that's part one of Dragon Week.
New battery.
There's my friend. There, I needed that. I feel rejuvenated.
Yeah, actually, Lux did this twice, and I think the second time they didn't get Gene Tierney, but the first time, it sounds like they did.
Ah, I thought not. Yeah, but it is. It is Jean Tierney. She's awesome. Very pretty lady.
Yes. And very talented. Wasn't it she that was in the original Ghost of Mrs. Muir? Was that her? No.
Well, there's a way to find out.
I guess there is. I know it also had Edward Mulhare as the captain in that. Who most people know better as Devin on what about the talking car, Knight Rider.
Ah, I thought it was my mother, the car. She was in 1947's The Ghost and Mrs. Muir.
Yeah.
1 year
I
after this film, right. Dragon Week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She was in Laura.
I like that film. I like the series, but I like the film quite a bit also. Yep. The Ghost of Mrs. Muir.
She was in Heaven Can Wait.
Oh, the original one with Don Ameche, yeah.
She was she played Belle Starr in Belle Starr.
Okay.
I had no idea. The Iron Curtain, That Wonderful Urge. That sounds dirty. Where the Sidewalks End. The Mating Season. Come on, Jean, what is with you? You know she's doing...
Well, no. She's doing everyday porno.
I thought she was in The Best Days of Our Lives, but it wasn't her.
Okay.
Which is all over Pluto. But only those two times, I think, she worked with Vincent Price. And that's what we're showing you this weekend to celebrate his birthday.
Yep.
And I'm not going to talk. I'm not allowed to talk about him a lot.
No, because you give away all the rest of the clues.
I've been cut off from talking
after
about
the quiz,
Vincent Price.
After the quiz, you can talk about him as much as you want.
Nope, I'm
but
going
don't
in
give away
the
all the answers.
And sulking. Because that's what I do. Yeah,
yep,
it doesn't work at home either. for various reasons we won't get into. Let's continue with part two, or real two, here at the drive-in.
Real two.
That's right, with Dragonwick.
I hope you won't find this too boring, the Grenier.
Shall I sit here next to you?
Please do.
That is a strange sort of chair you have, Nicholas.
This chair came from Holland with the first patroon. It has stood in this one spot for over 200 years. All right, Dirk, I'm ready.
Yes, mein Herr. The first man will come forward bringing rent and tribute. Klaus Flieger. Rent, winter wheat, and...
You brought nothing with you?
Nothing.
Perhaps your crops were poor.
My crops were good.
Take your hat off when you speak to the patroon.
I take my hat off to no man.
What you do with your hat is your own concern. Are you ready to pay your rent?
No. Nor will you ever again get so much as a grain of wheat from me.
Now what, Nicholas? You seem very calm.
Why shouldn't I be? It is your purpose, then, to farm my lands without making any returns?
Your lands? Do you hear that? His lands! We've paid the worth of it many times over, and you know it. Well, here's the finish.
In that case, I order you to leave my land by tomorrow noon. Have the next man step forward.
Otto Gephardt, Mr. Van Ryn.
Well, what brings you here, Dr. Turner?
I'm here to ask you to reconsider your decision. Klaus Blieker and his wife and children have no other home than the Hill Farm. Where will he take them?
That, I would say, is Klaus Bleeker's concern. Otto Gephardt?
Yes, Mynheer.
Empty-handed, too. Have you a reason?
You know the reason. It's his birthright as a free citizen. These men are not alone. The anti-rent movement has swept the whole of New York State. Take your head out of the sand, Van Ryn, and help solve this problem peacefully. Because it's got to be solved peacefully or not.
Well, speak up, Otto.
I'll bring the rent and tribute tomorrow, if that will suit.
Tomorrow, then. Will the rest of you men step forward, please? I have something to say.
No, man, no! I'm tired of listening and talking. I say an end to this here and now!
Drop that knife, Blieker!
I'll kill him!
Speak this about. Fool, Blieker, you...
Well, Dr. Turner, I suppose I must regard what you just did as an effort to save my life.
Klaus lost his head. None of us means violence.
Dirk, you will have Klaus Blieker placed under arrest. As for you, Doctor, I suppose I must thank you.
If Klaus had killed you, it would have done these men infinitely more harm than you can ever do alive. Don't thank me.
As you wish it. I shall say a few words about what has just happened, and they will be my last. Dr. Turner's efforts to incite anti-rent rebellion have been well known to me for many months now. Believe me, gentlemen, my welfare does not depend upon you. Rather, you depend upon it. But my rents and tributes and my responsibilities are hereditary, the symbols of a way of life to which I have been born and in which I shall continue to live. I shall never relinquish my position. I will be here tomorrow, and so will you, with rent and tribute. Good day, gentlemen.
All alone, Miranda?
Yes, Nicholas.
Are you enjoying the ball?
I suppose everyone has commented on your gown and how beautiful you look.
Not everyone. Do you like it, Nicholas?
Very much.
Do you think I'm beautiful?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. I'm very grateful.
You haven't answered my question. Are you enjoying yourself?
It's very interesting to watch.
That's no answer.
Well, then, no.
Why not?
You know that answer as well as I. Because I'm off a farm, and because I don't speak French, and because I don't belong here.
That's nonsense.
I'm as good as any of them.
Better than most.
But it's the wrong river. I'm not from the top of the Hudson, Nicholas. I'm from the Connecticut River bottom. They let me know that, those fine ladies I've tried to speak with. Oh, I've made such a fool of myself.
Dance with me, Miranda.
I can't go back in. They know what I am. By now everyone knows, and they'll laugh at me.
I doubt that very much.
But you don't know what...
I know that you'll be with me, and that if anyone laughs, we'll laugh. Dance with me.
Yes, Nicholas.
They're looking at us, Miranda. They're watching us quietly.
And they're not laughing, are they?
No, they're not laughing.
Then I shall. Suddenly I feel like laughing.
This house could stand a little laughter.
And a moment ago, I was afraid to dance with
you. Afraid?
Yes.
You must never be afraid of anything with me, Miranda.
I never will be, Mrs. Never.
Act Two of Dragonwyck, starring Jean Tierney as Miranda and Vincent Price as Nicholas Van Ryn. In the weeks that have passed, the wealth and abundance of Dragonwyck have been to Miranda Wells like a beautiful dream. But now a pall has fallen over Dragonwyck, for Nicholas's wife, Johanna, is ill.
No thunder in the world, Johanna, like the thunder of the Catskills. The lightning seems to set the mountains on fire. They roar back.
That's all very romantic, I'm sure. But it doesn't help my cold. If I must stay in bed, why can't I have Dr. Hamilton to look after me?
Why, you may, of course. As soon as the storm lets up and the roads are passable.
Where's Miranda?
She's with Katrine, reading to her.
Come in. What is it, Magda?
Excuse me, madame. Mein Herr Van Ryn asked that this be brought to you, this plant.
Why, Nicholas.
Yes, Johanna.
But your favorite plant, your Grinalda.
Why should it brighten my hothouse if it could brighten your room, my dear?
Nicholas. Oh, thank you, Nicholas. I can't remember when anything has pleased me more.
That will be all, Magda. Thank you.
Yes, mein Herr.
I know how you treasure it, Nicholas. And you... You sent it to me.
Why, Johanna, you're smiling. How good to see you feeling better. Now I'm sure you'll want to rest.
Nicholas, you're going to your tower room again?
Yes, why?
The servants think it strange that you spend so much time in a tower room.
And I find it strange that you should bother about what servants think.
But what could you possibly do up there?
It might be anything, Johanna, from pinning butterflies to hiding an insane twin brother. Actually, I read. I hope that satisfies you.
I'm sick. And you haven't even let Dr. Hamilton know.
Well, your happiness over the Grinalda plant seems to have faded most rapidly.
But you can't imagine what it's like to be sick. In this miserable, drab house.
I cannot imagine that Dragonwyck could be miserable or drab except to those who reflect misery and drabness from within themselves. I will stop in and see you later, Johanna.
Mein Herr?
Yes?
Dr. Turner has called.
No one sent for a doctor.
He says it's most urgent.
My regrets to Dr. Turner. I cannot be disturbed.
Yes, Mein Herr.
No. Magda, wait. I'll be glad to talk to Dr. Prince.
I wouldn't have intruded, Mr. Van Ryn, were it not so important. Klaus Bleeker has been arrested for murder.
Well, it's a pity you weren't there to stop him a second time, Dr. Turner.
But I was there. He didn't kill anyone. There's been an anti-rent riot near Smoky Hollow.
Oh, another rebellion, I see.
Klaus wasn't anywhere near the man who was killed, but they blamed it on him. The farmers aren't going to stand for this. They threatened to storm the jail.
And just what do you want me to do? Help my enemy to defeat me?
I want only your assurance that Bleeker will get a fair trial.
Dr. Turner, whether Bleeker lives or dies is of no more concern to me than my life was to him or you.
Good evening.
Oh, Miranda. Come in, my dear. You see, in spite of the storm, we have a visitor.
Dr. Turner.
Good evening.
Won't you stay for dinner, Doctor? Miranda, have Tompkins set another place.
Please, I'd rather not.
Perhaps I've been a little hasty, Doctor. I may be able to help you after all.
You've changed your mind?
Is John Van Buren to prosecute?
Yes.
We're close friends. I assure you that Klaus Bleeker will have every consideration. Now you might do something for me.
Well, if it's all within reason,
I don't think you'll find me extravagant. My wife is ill. A severe cold. Will you help her if you can?
Forgive me. Of course I will.
And you will stay for dinner?
Thank you, Miss Wells. I'll be very happy to. And a lighter diet might help, Mrs. Van Ryn. Soup, boiled eggs. Less pastry and sweets.
That's nonsense. Dr. Hamilton always told me to stuff a cold. I'll eat all I please.
You'd get well faster without it, but you'll get well anyway. What a beautiful plant.
Yes, it's a Grinalda, Doctor. Quite rare in this country. You're sure my wife will be all right?
Just a head cold.
Oh, you don't know how relieved I am. Now, if you and Miranda will wait dinner for me, I'll visit a little longer with Mrs. Van Ryn.
Yes, of course. Good night, Mrs. Van Ryn.
You told him you wanted to visit with me.
Of course I do, my dear.
Oh, Nicholas, you confuse me so. Sometimes when you bring me flowers and smile at me, I think...
What?
That you like me, and sometimes...
Yes?
I feel that you hate me and would like me to die. Nicholas, could we go away together when I'm well again?
Certainly, Joanna. As soon as you're well again.
Oh, I feel well enough already.
Well, in that case, I'm sure Dr. Turner would approve of your finishing your dinner. Shall I bring your cake? Looks very tempting. A rum cake.
Oh, yes. Please.
Here, my dear. Enjoy.
You're being very silent, Dr. Turner.
I was just thinking. You know, it's funny. The day we first met, I thought we'd have very much in common. But the way it's worked out... Frankly, right now, I don't think you have the slightest idea what to talk to me about.
Would you care for some sherry wine, Doctor?
No, thank you.
I believe I'll...
Oh, forgive me for taking so long. We fell to reminiscing, Joanna and I. We should dine at once.
This way, Doctor.
The storm is still raging. Don't think of going back to the village, Doctor. You'll stay overnight.
Oh, no, really,
we'll
I have to...
Consider all objections overruled. Of course you'll stay.
Please.
Magda?
About 10 minutes ago, she woke up in terrible pain. Oh, she's in such agony.
Magda, what's the matter?
It's Mrs. Van Rijn, miss. Oh, she was moaning so.
Did she take any medicine but what I gave her?
No, sir.
You'd better send for Mr. Van Rijn.
I already have. Here. Here's her room, doctor. My poor mistress. My poor mistress.
Van Rijn.
Mrs. Van Rijn.
What is it? What's happened?
Joanne.
Mr. Van Rijn, I... Your wife is dead. Dr. Turner,
what could have...
I can't understand it. Are you sure she took nothing but those drops I left?
Not while I was with her, sir.
And except for Magda, no one was with her but myself. I gave her some cake.
Acute gastritis. It's possible, but
Is it also possible that she may have been more ill than you imagined?
I'm afraid that's always a possibility.
See that the pastor is notified at once.
Yes, mein Herr.
I'm sure he didn't mean that you were to blame.
Whether he meant it or not, Miranda, I don't know why she died. And that's shameful. You'd better get some sleep.
I thought I... Yes, Doctor.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Here we are at the candy stand.
Ooh!
Halfway through Dragon Wick, a very good film / radio program, courtesy
the
Lux Radio Theater.
It's amazing, but sometimes the radio adaptions were almost even better than movie adaptions because they had to cut them down to whatever, 54 minutes, something like that, from the original film time. And so they cut things. I know that when the Ford Theater did the Horn Blows at Midnight, I enjoyed that more than I did the actual movie. The timing was better. They added a couple more lines for the audience, of course, to pick up on. But they shortened it to about the 54-minute mark with leaving time for the commercials.
Yep. Dave, did you know there are other famous horror birthdays? In fact, sharing a date with Vincent Price was the great Christopher Lee, born May 27th of 1922. And also, on today's date, May 26th, back in 1913, was the birth of Peter Wilton Cushing. So, yeah, Pete Cushing, Chris Lee, and Vincent
Vinny,
Price.
All the same weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty good. Now, Cushing's wiki description suggests he was made appearances in over 100 films, as well as many television, stage, and radio roles. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. We got to find some Peter Cushing.
Yeah, I think most of his were for BBC, but we can check that out.
Yeah, maybe there's some BBC stuff we can root through. love to have another horror classic here.
Yeah, maybe next year during this weekend we can work on Peter Cushing. I'll have to check that out, yes.
Or in a future year or whatever occasion comes up.
A wonderful idea.
Pete. The wrong Pete. This Pete. We got lots of radio with this Pete. With the American Pete. Lots of radio.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah, and there was. We'll be having more of that from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Let's see. There were a couple of American programs even that he was on. So.
All right. Well, that's a.
We should be able to. We'll delve into that.
I'll help you look when I can, Dave. But your resources are a little deeper than mine. In any event,
Matter of fact, one of the stories, I kind of checked it out for tonight. It was a little weak. I'll have to pull it, let's see if I can clean it up some. But it was, it not only had, I don't want to say that until I get in there and look at it. But
yeah,
it
look at your quiz.
Christopher Lee. No, it listed Christopher Lee, Vincent Price, and Peter Cushing.
Yep.
Now, I don't know if all three are in that episode, but that's what it said. Although I don't know which one now. It didn't give me a title. All right. We will look and find. We will look and find.
Yep. I'm surprised I haven't seen much on social media about this trio. I usually do on this time.
Yeah,
of year.
Usually there's a lot on there, but it kind of missed the boat this year so far. Now maybe
no,
because tomorrow's actually Vince's birthday.
Well, Dave, you're picking up the slack with this wonderful weekend programming and a tribute to Vincent Price. In our double feature weekend, it's Dragon Week, and tomorrow it'll be Lara. Let's get into Reel 3, the third part of Dragon Week from Lux Radio Theater.
Nicholas, please, you must get some rest.
You hear that bell, Miranda? I remember how it rang when Joanna and I were married. She said it was a heavenly bell that would ring for us until death. But we were never happy, Miranda. Never.
Nicholas, you must...
Oh, our life together was tolerable enough until Katrine was born. And then we knew that Joanna could have no more children. That there would be no more Van Ryns after me, that I would be the last.
I wish I knew something that I could say that would help you. I want to so much. Nicholas, you must have faith.
Yes, I intend to. I must not feel that my life is finished, and I won't. As long as you are with me.
The bell has stopped now. It must be nearly dawn.
Miranda. You have known as well as I that we were inevitable. Out of all this world, why should you have come to me and no one else? You knew it the instant our eyes first met. And you know it now.
You have no right to say that. To talk like this, please.
Then tell me that I'm wrong. And forgive me if you can. No, I had no right to speak as I did. And you have every reason to be angry. But I had to say it. There was no way for me not to. And no one but you to hear it. Good night, Miranda.
Good night, Nick.
Whoa there, whoa.
Why are you stopping, driver?
Someone down the road, miss. Looks like Dr. Turner.
Dr. Turner?
Miranda, I just heard you're going away.
Yes, sir. I'm going home. To Greenwich.
I think it's fine that you're going back to your folks. Well, what I meant is that, well, Greenwich isn't so very far away, is it? Maybe I can come there and visit in a month or so?
Of course. Whenever you're passing through, Jeff.
Would next week? No, I guess that would be too soon.
Well, I hadn't...
Oh, I know there's so much you don't know about me, Miranda, but I've always hoped that in time I could show you how I really felt, and maybe... Miranda, you know what I'm trying to say, don't you?
Yes, Jeff, I think I do.
I'd like to think that in time I...
Jeff!
Is it that hopeless? I'm sorry. Have a good trip.
Thank you.
Bye, Miranda.
Goodbye, Jeff. Yes, Pa.
How long is it since you came back home from Dragon Week?
I don't know, Pa. Months.
Yes, months. And something's been wrong with you ever since.
Nothing's wrong.
I promised your mother to get to the bottom of this, and I'm going to. I haven't seen you smile since the day you drove in here in that fancy carriage.
You've been no more one of us than if you never came home at all.
I'm sorry, Pa, if I've upset everyone.
It's because your home's not fine enough now, because we're not fine enough.
That's not true. It has nothing to do with that.
Ephraim!
We're in here, Ma.
Oh, Ephraim, a message. It just came from the village.
Who's it from?
Well, I don't know. I didn't open it.
See if you can talk some sense into her, Ma. I just can't.
Oh, Miranda, dear, it's just that Pa loves you. We all love you, and it hurts us so to see you.
I'll be concerned if this don't beat all.
Well, what is it?
Nicholas Van Ryn is in Greenwich. He's coming here this afternoon.
Nicholas.
Yes. A matter of the greatest importance, he says.
Oh, at last. At last.
Huh? What in Tunket could he want?
I don't know. I'm only hoping. Hoping.
They returned to Dragonwich a few weeks later. Nicholas Van Ryn and the gay and beautiful Miranda Wells, this time as man and wife. A month later, Nicholas went away on a business trip, but now he's back in the arms of his young and beautiful bride.
Oh, Nicholas, you're home at last.
Miranda, Miranda, I'd almost forgotten how lovely you were.
I'm not when you're not with me. I'm not anything.
You have missed me?
Oh, terribly. Katrine, too.
She's still in Boston, of course, with her aunt.
She seems wonderfully happy from her letters. She wants to stay, go to school there with her cousin.
An excellent decision.
But, Nicholas...
I'm very selfish, my darling. I want only you at Dragonwick. Only you.
Oh, I beg your pardon. I didn't know...
Oh, Peggy, this is Mr. Van Ryn. Was it anything important?
Well, it was just to remind you that you ate none of your breakfast this morning.
Please, let's not talk of food.
Well, you'll eat everybody your lunch, or there'll be quite a bit of talk.
Tell me, Peggy, why do I ever put up with you?
I don't know, ma'am, but you'll eat your lunch just the same.
And who is that?
Her name is Peggy O'Malley, Nicholas. I've engaged her as my personal maid.
Your maid? That untidy little creature?
She's not untidy, Nicholas. And her lame leg's no fault of hers. She's had a miserable life.
Well, that's the strangest recommendation I've ever heard.
She's bright and willing and good to me. And, Nicholas, I want her as my maid.
I shall have Tompkins give her some extra money and a good character.
It's so little to ask. Please.
Deformed bodies depress me, Miranda.
How dare you say that?
How dare I?
You speak as if her crippled leg were a weakness on her part rather than God's will.
We'll agree, then, it is God's will. Now tell me the plans for the Kermesse ball. Oh, I saw Madame Duclos in New York. She'll have your gown ready in plenty of time.
I shan't need a new gown, Nicholas.
Why not?
Because we can't have a ball without people. Everyone is declining our invitation. Because of me, Nicholas. Because you married me.
Miranda, you are Mrs. Nicholas Van Ryn. You will be with me wherever I am, always. Yes, Tompkins?
Luncheon is ready on the veranda, sir.
Thank you.
Nicholas.
Yes?
Sometimes I think that your friends, that we...
That we what?
I think about the night Joanna died. It was so soon after. Perhaps we should have waited to decide.
In the hope that our gossip-mongering neighbors would be more approving?
I don't care what they think, Nicholas. It's just that we know, and so does God.
Miranda, I've never heard you speak so childishly before. Do you believe there's a God snooping on human behavior, punishing all violations of the pastor's latest sermon?
I believe that God has put a sense of right and wrong within all of us, Nicholas. And that when we do wrong, no matter if no one else knows, we do.
Yes, my dear. Now sit down. Luncheon looks delicious.
Nicholas, you do believe in God.
I believe in myself, and I am answerable to myself. I will not live according to printed mottos like the directions on a medicine bottle. Would you like me to say grace?
That won't be necessary.
Then I shall mix the salad dressing.
I can't stay here. I can't.
Miranda! Miranda! What possible excuse can you have for humiliating me before the servants? What is the matter with you?
Oh, I believe in God.
Which is your privilege? I have no intention of...
And so will my child believe in him.
Miranda.
And I will pray to God to make him healthy and strong and happy.
Oh, my God. My God.
Have I done something to please you at last?
May I kiss you, Miranda? Please, may I kiss you.
I was sorry to interrupt your meeting with the farmers, Dr. Turner, but...
Well, we hardly expected you, Mr. Van Ryn. As you gathered, we were celebrating the new state constitution. The farmers may now buy the land that they've been working.
I came on a still more important mission. You have not seen Mrs. Van Ryn of late, have you?
No, I've not seen Mrs. Van Ryn for months.
She is about to have a child. I need your help. Dr. Williams is there,
Williams
but
is a fine
She's
doctor.
A fool. I beg of you to help her.
She's in danger?
I don't know that she... Doctor, nothing must happen to my son.
I'll do what I can.
Thank heaven you've come, Doctor. I think Van Ryn would kill me if anything went wrong.
But that's nonsense, Dr. Williams.
Is it? When I tried to resign from the case last week, he had me locked in my room, and watching me all the time through those icy eyes of his.
About Mrs. Van Ryn.
She'll have her child before evening. Everything's quite normal.
Then why did he send for me?
The child. There's an irregularity in the heartbeat.
I see. Why don't you get some rest, Doctor?
You'll call me? My room is just down the hall.
Don't worry. I'll call you.
I don't know what to believe, Mr. Knott. You'll take care of me now.
Yes, Miranda.
I'll be all right. I'm not afraid anymore. You'll help me.
I'll help you. I'll always help you, Miranda. It's all right, Miranda. Everything will be all right.
Why do you look so sober, Dr. Turner? This is a day of joy. My son has been born.
There's something you must know, Mr. Van Ryn. Your son is not well. I can't tell you how sorry I am. But your wife is fine, and in time, there's no reason why she can't have other children.
My son is entirely well, Dr. Turner.
His heart is malformed. Nobody's fault. Nothing could have prevented it. It's just a tragic accident that he won't live.
There's a carriage waiting to take you to the village.
You'll never believe anything you don't want to, will you?
And there'll be no need for you to see Mrs. Van Ryn again. If you'll excuse me, Doctor, the pastor is waiting. My son will be baptized tomorrow.
And in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Ghost, I do baptize thee, Adrian Peter Van Ryn. Mynheer Van Ryn, please accept my most sincere congratulations.
Thank you, Dominic.
And you, dear lady.
Thank you.
You understand, of course, that this house ceremony was only at the insistence of Mrs. Van Ryn. In a month or two, my son will be properly baptized in the Dragonwick Church.
Yes, of course.
No, Nicholas. We can thank God that he was baptized in time.
In time?
The child I hold in my arms. My son. My son is dead.
Is that you, Peggy?
Yes, Mum. Should I light some candles?
No, I like the dark.
Well, you'll ruin your eyes. How long have you been up there this time, in the tower room?
A week, maybe more.
Oh, ever since the baby.
I'm sure it isn't very pleasant for him.
Oh, and what is it for you? Shut up there for days on end without a word or a sound.
Peggy.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm going up to him.
Oh, not alone.
Don't be silly.
Oh, I'll not let you go up there alone. No, don't, please. I'm afraid. I'm afraid.
Yeah. And I'm afraid that's the end of part three of Dragon Wick from Lux Radio Theater.
Hey, we brought up earlier in the game Chung King. And I have found you're going to need a scorecard to keep up with this, Dale, okay?
All right.
Chung King was an American brand. Chung King was an American brand of canned Chinese food products founded in the 1940s by Gino Paluzzi, who also developed Gino's Pizza Rolls and Frozen Pizza, and then Michelina's brand of frozen food products, among many others. By 1962, Chung King was bringing in $30 million in annual revenue and accounted for half of all U.S. sales of prepared Chinese food. In 1966, it was sold to R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company for $63 million.
Yikes.
Then R.G. Reynolds merged with Nabisco Brands in 1985, and the new company changed its name to RJR Nabisco the following year. In 1989, Chung King was sold to Yeo Hap Sing of Singapore to help pay for the Kohlberg Kravis Roberts leverage buyout of RJR Nabisco. Okay, keep your notes going there. RJR Nabisco had previously sold Chung King line of frozen foods to Conga Ara Foods in 1986 after losing market share. Yeo Hap Sing sold Chung King in 1995 to Hunt Wesson, owner of rival La Choy. Hunt Wesson's parent, Kangara, eventually closed Chung King's manufacturing facilities and discontinued the brand. So there you go.
Oh.
So Chung King is no more, except in all the wonderful ads that Stan Freberg left behind.
Yes. The great Stan Freberg. We've heard a lot of him around here on Erie House, for sure.
And deservedly so.
And you might hear more. You never know. Yeah, never know. Well, we got part four. We got a quiz. And we've got Treasure Star coming up with more Vincent Price as we celebrate his birthday weekend. It's a double feature drive-in here on Erie House Radio.
Now that you've come up here, don't be frightened.
I'm not frightened, Nicholas.
Yes, you do have courage. It must have taken a great deal to make a pilgrimage to the mysterious tower room. I assume your twisted little servant is offering up suitable prayers for your safe return?
I see no reason why they should be necessary.
Why? Because of what you see, just a room, no velvet drapes, or heathen idols, or burning incense.
Nicholas, what do you do in this room?
What do I do? I live. But how could you understand? Oh, don't be offended. By ordinary standards, you're quite intelligent. But I will not live by ordinary standards. I will not look to the ground and move on the ground with the pack. Not so long as there are those mountaintops out there and clouds and limitless space. You still don't understand, do you?
I want to try if you'll help me.
Then steel yourself. Prepare to have your God-fearing, farm-bred, prayer-fat morality shaken to its core. You see, I have become what is vulgarly known as a drug addict.
Why?
What? No tearful reproaches? No attempts to regenerate me?
Why do you find it necessary?
Because I have set free something within me. Something that ever since I can remember has been like a rock in my heart, in my brain. Pushing at me. Choking me.
I know you better than you think. And you're just running away.
Is it as simple as all that?
Yes, Nicholas, as simple as that. When you've come up against something unpleasant that you couldn't change, like the rent law.
Or the death of my son.
Oh, son.
Get out of here.
I want to help you.
I don't need to be helped.
Help me, then. Please don't shut me up like this. Let me be unhappy with you and happy again. Let me be part of you. Let me love you. Love me, too.
That's how she would talk. Joanna. And Joanna is dead.
Thank you.
went up to the tower room to see him, but it did no good, no good at all.
That's quite a story, Peggy, but I'm afraid you'll have to tell Mrs. Van Ryn there isn't much I can do for her husband.
Tell her? Well, she doesn't know I've come to see you. It isn't him I'm worried about. It's her. I'm afraid for her.
Afraid of what?
Well, I can't say right out, sir, but, oh, there's a blackness in that house and in him. Oh, you've got to take her away.
What makes you think she wants to go?
Whether she wants to or not. You can't leave her there to be hurt and hurt again, not knowing what she's done wrong or how to do right. Happy as a child because he so much as sends a plant to a room and...
A plant? What sort of a plant?
Something that grows in the hothouse, sir. Grinald, I think she said.
Come on, Peggy. I'm going to Dragonwick now.
Why have you come to my room, Nicholas? What do you want?
Inasmuch as this is my house, must I explain my presence in it?
Of course not. Forgive me, I'm just so tired.
Yet I cannot remember you more beautiful than you are now. Your strength, your grace, your unexpected look of quality. It would be a pity if you were not to have another child.
That's a matter of the Lord's will.
Oh, yes, the Lord. The Lord who giveth life and also takes it away. Why did he take away my son's life?
I have no way of knowing that, Nicholas.
Why do you suppose you are here, Miranda? By the Lord's will or by mine? What you are is the reflection of what I wanted you to be. Now you do look frightened. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking of Johanna.
Why?
I don't know. Nicholas, what is it?
You hear something.
What?
Nothing, nothing. It's nothing. It's just the wind through the trees.
There is no wind
tonight.
There is,
over a creaking board somewhere. It's not important. It's stopped now.
But I didn't hear anything.
Neither did I.
But you did, and you still do. It from the Red Room. Harpsichord. Azeal.
Stop it, Miranda.
Then that dream did hear her that night when Johanna died. And you must have heard it, too. And you must have been listening the night our little son. I never believed it, really, but now I do. Nicholas, where are you going? Nicholas! In the Red Room, Doctor. Staring at that picture on the wall. Just standing there, staring at that picture.
Wait here, Peggy. Good evening, Mr. Van Ryn.
What? Oh, Dr. Turner. Summoned in the best heroic tradition by the faithful little cripple. And have you an army of farmers armed with pitchforks lurking in the garden?
No, that fight's long over and you lost it. But Peggy seemed worried about you.
Do I look as if I needed medical aid?
I can't diagnose from appearance alone.
You've become more careful, Dr. Turner. I can recall when your diagnoses were less thorough.
I've learned a lot since then. For one thing, I've made a careful study of plant life.
I would think human life more important.
Jeff, what are you doing here?
About to discuss plant life with your husband. I assume you've thanked him prettily for the lovely plant in your room?
I don't understand.
He understands. Your late wife's bedroom, Mr. Van Ryn, the night she died. I was never able to forget that plant. At first, I thought only that it was very beautiful. I've learned since it was also very deadly.
Nicholas, what does he mean?
The plant contains a glucoside, similar in action to digitalis, but much more toxic. How shrewd to have a doctor on hand that night you asked me to dinner. And weren't you lucky, Mr. Van Ryn, that I wasn't a better doctor? It was all so simple. Your wife with a bad cold. She couldn't possibly have tasted anything in the cake. Was soaked with rum anyway.
I don't believe it. Stop it out!
Pick up his pistol, Miranda. I suggest that you stay here, Mr. Van Ryn. Don't try to leave Dragonwick. If you do, even your friend the prosecutor will be quite helpless to aid you.
Nicholas.
Let me alone and get out. All of you, get out.
Nicholas.
There he is, sitting on the patrol Just like you did at the Kermesse.
Hold up your lanterns there. Mr. Van Ryn. Mr. Van Ryn.
Mayor Curtis, isn't it?
You don't mind, Mr. Van Ryn. I'll have to ask you to come along with us.
But I do mind. I have no intention of going anywhere with anyone.
This is not a request, Van Ryn. You're under arrest.
Back so soon, Dr. Turner?
Nicholas,
oh,
please.
My wife.
Go with him. It's your only chance.
My only chance. How little you know me, Miranda. Even Joanna would never have said that.
Dr. Turner, you might use your influence to benefit these men for once and tell them to get out of here.
How little you know me, Mr. Van Ryn, or them.
I am well armed, Dr. Turner. You don't believe I'd shoot again?
Yes, I believe you. Drop your pistol, Van Ryn. All right, men, take the prisoner.
Have it your own way, then.
Look at you. All of you. Taking off your hat. That's right. Take off your hats in the presence of the patrol.
And now you're going home, Miranda, leaving Dragonwick.
You could ride to the boat landing with me, Jeff.
I'd like nothing better, except that I'd have to ride back here alone. Is that all you're taking with you?
It's all I brought with me from home. Except a black dress.
The way you just said home, as if you never had any other.
Have I? Ever? You know, Ma once said she never should have let me come to Dragonwick. That she was afraid. You couldn't marry a dream, she said. Do you dream, Jeff?
Sometimes I dream.
Some dreams are very real. So real that they get confused with reality. And then when you wake up and look around, you find yourself saying, what am I doing here? What has this to do with what I want? And I guess you make up your mind you've had a nightmare. And you go crawling to your Ma and Pa.
So it's back to Greenwich now, Miranda, with never another thought of anything here.
Greenwich isn't so far away, Jeff. Perhaps sometime you'll be passing through.
As every producer knows, truly fine actors in a truly great play are surefire box office. And that's what we enjoyed tonight, with all our thanks to Gene Tierney and Vincent Price.
Thank you, Bill. It was a real thrill doing Dragonwick again with Vince. Although I must say, he makes a somewhat awesome patroon.
You know, Gene, that title has always bothered me. I keep mixing it up with platoons, paltoons, doubloons, pontoons.
And Looney Tunes.
Thank
you. Speaking of patroons, I wonder how many of our audience know that Vincent Price is one of Hollywood's most loyal patrons of the arts.
Well, Bill, I've always been interested in painting and encouraging young painters.
And you're a very talented painter yourself, Vince.
Mostly out of curiosity.
How do you mean, curiosity?
Well, when I start a painting, I never know quite what it's going to be. And when I'm finished, I always wonder what it is.
Do you go in for painting, Gene?
All I know is the primary colors. Stop and go.
I'd say Jean's quarters. Motion pictures. Wait till you see her in Darrell F. Zanuck's version of The Razor's Edge.
I've seen it. And Jean's performance does more than justice to Somerset Maugham's great story.
Thank you, Bill. I understand you have a special treat for your audience next Monday night.
Yes, something hundreds of our listeners have requested. A great play with two of screendom's most exciting stars. It's the Warner Brothers hit, To Have and Have Not, starring Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall.
Well, Bill, I see your audience approves.
Together for the first time on the air, Humphrey and Lauren play their original screen roles in this thrilling drama based on Ernest Hemingway's best-selling novel, a story of intrigue, passion, and suspense.
Event I wouldn't miss, Bill.
We'll be listening. Good night.
Good night,
and come back again soon. Our sponsors, the makers of Lux Flakes, join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday evening. when the Lux Radio Theater brings you Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall into Have and Have Not. This is William Keeley saying goodnight to you from Hollywood.
You can't always find your favorite soap on your dealer's shelf. That's because the whole world is short of the fats and oils needed to make soap and scores of other products. The only way you can keep on having as much soap even as you have now is by saving and turning in your used kitchen fats. Scores of other industries need fats, too. If they have no used fats to draw on, they will have to use some of the finer oils reserved for soap making. That means less soap for you. So save every drop of used fat. Turn in the full can promptly. Your dealer will give you 4 cents for every pound. Vincent Price appeared through the courtesy of 20th Century Fox, producers of the Technicolor feature, Margie. Heard in our cast tonight were Gail Gordon as Jeff, Margaret Muse as Joanna, Norman Field as Wells, and Gloria McMillan, Janet Scott, Truda Marson, Griff Barnett, Jay Novello, Jeff Corey, Sandra Rogers, Herbert Litton, and Charles Seal. Our music was directed by Louis Silvers. This program is broadcast to our men and women overseas through cooperation with the Armed Forces Radio Service. And this is your announcer, John Milton Kennedy, reminding you to tune in again next Monday night to hear To Have and Have Not with Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall.
That's right. We got Dragonwick there, and I missed the voice, a very normally very unmistakable voice of Gail Gordon, they mentioned in the credits.
Yeah, I missed that too. I did miss that until the credits, yeah.
But there you go. So
but, when he was
in cast tonight. Seriously.
Yeah. But you know what? There is something we can learn from this, Dale.
My goodness, I wouldn't have expected that. Can't you tell? Erie House Radio proudly presents A Garrulous Moral of the Story.
It's apologies to Gar. Forget the butler. It's Vincent Price that done it. There you go.
There we go.
Exactly.
Get
exactly.
The taste right out of your mouth, right there.
All right, so that we can let Dale once again start talking about Vincent Price, it is time for the Vincent Price Fact.
We've got to have an intro.
Or made up. Oh, we have an intro. Okay.
Here's some fanfare. Let me find some fanfare real quick. Oh, here we go.
Vincent Price Fact or Made Up. Vincent Price never portrayed a vampire in the movies, but he did so on television. Is that a Price Fact or Made Up?
I don't know. I'm going to say...
Oh, you got it.
Yes, he played a vampire on television.
That is indeed a Price Fact. Vincent Price played Count Sforza, who moved from Transylvania to the West in the TV show F Troop.
Ah, there we go. See?
Question number two. Vincent Price's movie, The House of Wax, was the first 3D movie released by a major American studio. Is that a Price Fact or Made Up?
A major studio. What do you think, Gallery? Fogsbane? Good old Bob? GGSI paper? Any guesses? I think I know what I'm going to go with. I know what I'm going to go with. But we'll give them a couple seconds to answer in the chat. All right, couple
nobody
seconds.
Answered. Go ahead.
Let's Fogsbane see.
Fogsbane,
major
yes.
studio. I'm going to say that's true.
Actually, that is made up. House of Wax was the second 3D movie being beat out by only 2 days by the movie Man in the Dark.
Yes,
2 days.
That Sunstone Man in the Dark. Whatever.
Yeah, what a classic it was. Never heard of it.
Because I'm wondering if there's a very early Arch Obler film that was done in 3D. Jungle Goddess, maybe, or something
but I don't think his was released by a major group.
That would be his
kind of independently produced.
Yeah, okay. So that was false.
Okay.
Let's
the next one. Vincent Price played a kidnapper in a multi-episode Brady Bunch. Price fact or made up?
A kidnapper on the Brady Bunch. I'm gonna go with that could be true. I can see Vince doing that.
Hey, Pogs Bane, you've been answering. You got an answer for this one? Drew says Mrs. GTSI paper and Mrs. GTSI paper is indeed correct. That is
Yay!
A good fact.
Good
one. Price played a strange professor who kidnapped the Brady Boys in a 3-episode story.
Uh-oh.
Question. The Price family fortune was built on candy and baking powder. Is that a Price fact or made up?
This one I'm pretty sure I know quite well. Unless there's a technicality I get burned on.
Okay, good old Bob says that's just wacky enough to be true.
It is true.
And the answer is it is true. Yes, it is a Vincent Price fact. Vincent's grandfather invented the first cream of tartar-based baking powder, which he sold under the name of Dr. Price's Baking Powder, while Vince's father owned the National Candy Company.
Yep, that is absolutely
true. Next question. In the 1960s, Price, a renowned art expert, teamed up with Montgomery Ward's to find and sell great works of arts by renowned artists. Is that a Price fact or made up?
TGSI paper. None of the above. I know he was into art, but I can't ascribe to that particular fact. Bugs Bean says true. GGSI paper says fact. I'll go with them.
Actually, it's made up. It's Sears he teamed up with and turned out to be very profitable for the company. They sold more than 50,000 original artworks with the program running for nearly 10 years. So it was Sears, not Montgomery Ward's.
Yeah, we had commercial for that. That used to play on Erie House TV, as I recall.
Yeah, that's one of those trick questions, yeah.
Yep.
All right, here's the one Dale gave away. One of Price's last roles was in the cartoon Animaniacs, where he played Edgar Allan Poe.
I know the answer.
Is it a Price fact?
I'm the one who blew
or
it.
Or a made-up fact? Yeah, that's okay. Well, this is a gimme from Dale. Dale, go ahead and tell him.
That would be false. He was on Tiny Toons. He was also in something called Heart of Justice and the voice of Zigzag in The Thief and the Cobbler in 1993. That's his last credited film role.
Yep. Well, and Tiny Toons eventually played Allan Poe, and he narrated a version of The Raven. Too bad we can't use that, Dale.
Oh, I know.
All right. Next question. Being a gourmet chef, Vincent Price once showed everyone how to cook a fish in a dishwasher on television. Is that a Price fact or made up?
That's just crazy enough to be true. I don't know. What do you guys think? Fogs? GGSI paper? Bob? Any thoughts? I got one to add.
They're not answering that one. Okay.
Right.
So, Dale,
I'm
gonna
say
going
it's
with...
true. I'm going to say it's true.
That is indeed a Price fact. He did this on the Johnny Carson show, and I just added, I guess that's one way to clean a fish. Bob, Rhyming Liberty, lay down for a nap an hour before an important event without setting the alarm. That's true. That's something I learned, too.
All right. Next question. Vincent Price used to sign the name Dolores Del Rio when asked for an autograph. Is that a Price fact or is it a made up?
I have no idea. Dolores Del Rio.
Dolores Del Rio.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to say
all
false.
All right, well, here it is.
False, false, false.
It is, actually, that is a Vincent Price fact. When asked about it, Price said, I promised Dolores on her deathbed that I would not let people forget about her.
Aww.
So he went around signing Dolores Del Rio in many cases.
That's nice.
Next question. Vincent Price has been two stars in Hollywood Walk of Fame for his contributions to radio and film. Is that a Price fact or made up?
Hmm. It's believable. I mean, he had a prolific radio career.
He did.
Don't know.
Both here and on the BBC.
How could it not be true? How could it not be true?
That's made up.
Of course.
Vincent Price does have two stars. One is for film. The other is for television.
Oh.
Although, you know what? I wouldn't be surprised if he did more radio than television. All right. And our last question. Vincent Price
our second to last
an
question.
Archie-ham. Well, that's true. We do have a bonus question. You're right.
We got a bonus.
Anyway. Vincent Price had an art museum named after him in East Los Angeles. Is that a Price fact or made up?
Well, it should be true, in my opinion.
We'll give you that one. Yes, that is a Price fact. Vincent Price Art Museum was named after him for donating parts of his collection to its halls. The museum features over 9,000 pieces of art. And just in case you're on the border at 50-50 with these answers, we do have the Vincent Price bonus question.
Yep, fact
and the
or
question
fiction?
Is,
fact or fiction? According to Price, when he and Peter Lorre went to view Bela Lugosi's body at Lugosi's funeral, Lorre, upon seeing Lugosi dressed in his famous Dracula cape, quipped, "Do you think we should drive a stake through his heart just in case?" Fact or fiction?
I believe that is, it sounds bad, but I do believe it's fact.
How about the gang? Fogs, DGSI paper? DGSI paper says true. You are, I'm sorry, but you are absolutely correct. that is something that Price said. Now, whether that happened, I don't know, but I could picture Peter Lorre kind of leaning in to say that.
I can
sadly,
see him
because,
saying that, too.
Sadly, I don't know if Lugosi ever got the respect that the others did because of some of his personal challenges.
That could be. Okay, we a bonus question, though, Dale, for those who were on the fence of having five right and five wrong.
Oh, okay. Yet
so, here it comes. Vincent Price's voice is featured on a Disneyland Paris attraction. Is that a Vincent Price fact or fiction?
A Paris, like as in France?
As in Paris, France, yes.
I know he was in Disneyland, but I don't know if specifically in Paris. I'm going to say false. Fiction.
Actually, that is a Vincent Price fact. Disneyland Paris hired him to record narration for their dark ride attraction, Phantom Manor. However, the audio was shortly replaced by a French narration, so only Price's evil laugh remained. Now, update. After a major renovation in 2019, Walt Disney Reimagineering brought back his recordings and included previously unused material in the refurbished attraction. So there you go. He's back as good as ever. In Paris,
In a way, he never left us.
He, in many ways, he hasn't. And I tell you what, because of his work with Michael Jackson, who, according when we were got to hear his daughter speak about him, he agreed to do it, and he didn't even know who Michael Jackson was. And that may be the one thing that will live longer than anything else he ever did.
It's quite possible. You know, those of us in horror circles, we certainly appreciate him for a lot more than just that. But due to the pop culture power that Michael Jackson had, you might be quite right on that count.
Might be. All right, Dale. Well, we still have plenty of time here for if you wanted to. You know, one thing you talked about, and I know you have it there, Dale, the little speech that he gives. He was very much about equality for all Americans. And I think you have one of his little speeches from the end of The Saint, which he did quite often.
Yes, he did, and believe it or not, this is from way back in 1950.
Ladies and gentlemen, poison doesn't always come in bottles, and it isn't always marked with the skull and crossbones of danger. Poison can take the form of words and phrases and acts, the venom of racial and religious hatred. Here in the United States, perhaps more than ever before, we must learn to recognize the poison of prejudice and to discover the antidote to its dangerous effects. Evidences of racial and religious hatred in our country place a potent weapon in the hands of our enemies, providing them with the ammunition of criticism. Moreover, group hatred menaces the entire fabric of democratic life. As for the antidote, you can fight prejudice, first by recognizing it for what it is, and second by actively accepting or rejecting people on their individual worth, and by speaking up against prejudice and for understanding. Remember, freedom and prejudice can't exist side by side. If you choose freedom, fight prejudice.
The only problem I have with that is if we're going to judge people by their worth, I'm shot.
Me too.
Yeah. I don't know what we're going to do.
But the rest of it you can't argue with.
No. I'm not going to get into issues of the day, but... Those words were needed desperately then, and sometimes I think they're needed desperately now.
I think they're needed as much or more today than they were in 1950. Look at that. We're looking at something, 70 years ago?
Yeah.
You know,
can't we all just get along? God.
Yeah.
That's my thought on it. There we go. Because I don't care, especially if you like old-time radio. I really don't care.
Yeah, that's right.
You know,
hey, we have a treasury parade of stars left to share with everybody, Dale.
Yep, and it's called the Second Battle of Brooklyn. Dave, tell us a little bit about it before we jump right in.
Well, it's a program called the... the Treasury Parade of Stars.
Do we have a broadcast date, mayhap?
Well, sort of.
Okay.
Just looking up here, it's created by the U.S. Treasury Department to stimulate the sales of war bonds. There were 157 of these, and were coming out of the Great Depression, and they were using the sale of war bonds to help support the war effort, and they had several drives, but that's really what the Treasury Department was there to help get people to buy war bonds. And most of the actors, I think all the actors that portrayed in these gave their services. They didn't charge for it. They gave their services for these programs.
Yes, and
so
bless their hearts.
Kind of looking at it to see
nothing like a little
some...
funding for boom booms.
Yeah. So I was just looking to see if there was actually any dates on these. And basically, they were put on disc and shipped around to all the radio stations to play as often as possible. And the only date I have on this would be from 1942.
Mm-hmm. Treasury Star Parade. Produced under the personal direction of William A. Bacher, with David Brookman and the Treasury Orchestra, and Ann Thomas and Eddie O'Shea in a radio play written especially for the Treasury Star Parade by J. Franklin Jones, entitled The Second Battle of Brooklyn, your master of ceremonies, Vincent Price. In this land of the free and the home of the brave is this town called Brooklyn. And in this town, there's a cute red-headed girl named Myrtle McGuire. I can't give you her phone number because her nearest telephone is down at the corner drugstore. But if geography will help you, go out and watch them bums, the Brooklyn Dodgers, play ball. And every time somebody busts a home run out of the park, it'll bounce into Bedford Avenue and almost into the McGuire's front parlor. And that's the scene of our story, the McGuire's apartment, with cute, talkative, average, red-headed Myrtle McGuire at the front door, calling up two flights of stairs to her boyfriend, Eddie.
Hey, Eddie! Eddie!
Yeah, Myrtle? What do you want?
Will you bring your hot water bottle down here right away?
Okay, Myrtle, right away. Hey, Myrtle, what's wrong with you?
Nothing.
Your mother sick?
I don't think so. She's at the movies.
Your kid brother?
No, Willie's out washing the dishes.
Are you sick, then?
Has somebody got to be sick?
So what are you going to do with this hot water bottle, then? Store gasoline in it?
I want to turn it in for scrap rubber.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Myrtle. That ain't fair.
I guess if I'm willing for them to turn my girdle into a flying fortress...
Myrtle.
I guess you can give up your old hot water bottle, too.
That ain't so old. Besides, it's the only one I got.
You got no use for it, Eddie. You bought it 2 years ago when you had a toothache, and now your toothache don't ache no more.
Of course it don't ache no more. I got it pulled out the next day.
You see, you haven't used it for 2 whole years. So it's going in my collection of scrap rubber for Uncle Sam. The government needs rubber, Eddie. Something awful.
Okay, Myrtle, okay. I always lose.
Thanks. Maybe they'll make a barrage balloon out of it, huh, Eddie?
Yeah. Look, Myrtle, I ain't finished my supper yet. We got meat tonight. What time we going dancing?
Oh, Eddie, didn't I tell you I can't go?
Oh, why not? We made the date last week. I said, it's Tuesday night, okay? And you said, yeah, Tuesday night is swell. I was with you. I heard you.
But I got to go to a meeting, which I didn't know about then.
But Tommy Dorsey is playing. What kind of meeting?
The Air Raid Warden.
What, again? Hey, if you ask me, you just want to go there so you can hang around that Louis Metzger.
Nobody's asking, you see. Besides, I'm not in the least ways interested in Louis Metzger, and you know it.
Last week, we was going to go to Coney Island. And you got to go to a Red Cross meeting or something. It's always that way. One night it's air raid wardens, and then it's collecting rubber for the Red Cross, or selling bonds, or dancing at the USO. Every time I ask you to go someplace, you always got to go someplace else.
Tomorrow night I'm giving away a pint of my blood.
A pint of your blood? How are you going to keep warm this winter?
Nevertheless, the president says we all got to do our parts, Eddie.
Sure. Ain't I doing mine?
You could still do more, Eddie.
Look, I am working in a defense plant, ain't I? All day Saturdays and part of Sundays, too. Everybody can't do everything, you know. You got to leave something for somebody else to do. You ain't Sergeant York.
We all got to get ready for the Second Battle of Brooklyn.
The what?
The Second Battle of Brooklyn, I said. Don't you hear good anymore, Eddie? You know, I think working in the defense plant has warped your eardrums.
Just stop there a minute and tell me one thing.
What?
Where was I when they was fighting the First Battle of Brooklyn?
Right here. Don't you remember? 2 years ago.
Huh. You mean that crucial series that the Dodgers and Giants set up at the Polo Grounds?
No, I don't mean any such thing. I mean the Battle of Brooklyn against the Nazis.
You mean Hitler and them Nazis is right here fighting on Bedford Avenue, and none of us knew about it?
Well, yes and no.
That is impossible, Michael. I would have at least read it in the newspapers.
You don't understand things easy, do you? I'm talking about the town of Brooklyn over in Holland.
Huh?
You see, our Brooklyn here in America is named after Brooklyn, Holland. Even though they're spelled different. While maybe they wasn't before, now they're one and the same thing, like Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy.
Never mind Charlie McCarthy. Stick to the point. When did I, where did I, and how did I ever get to fighting with Hitler in Brooklyn?
Well, if you'll just keep quiet long enough, Eddie, I'll tell you.
Yeah, you've probably seen the whole thing in the movies with Don Amici.
We was all sitting there in our house in Brooklyn, Holland.
I told you I was never...
Remember it, Eddie? We was all sitting around the supper table. Me and Mom and Willie, and you was there too, Eddie, like always on Sunday nights. And Like always, Mom was saying grace.
Our dear Father in heaven, bless this school that is before us. We thank you for it. And bless this our house. Give us wisdom and hope through this long night. Bless our soldiers at the front. Bless our flag. Bless our freedom. Amen.
Then it got quiet, Eddie. Nobody was talking much, not even me. Nobody could hardly eat. It was like the bases was full and two outs. Everybody was scared, Eddie, and trying to let on they wasn't.
Mom. Mom, what you said when you were saying grace just now.
Hmm?
Are you scared, Mom?
No, Willie, I'm not afraid.
Don't be, Mom. The Germans is at least 60 miles away still.
Willie, I wouldn't be afraid if they were marching down the street. None of us need be afraid as long as we're on God's side.
They'll never get as far as Brooklyn, Mom.
Our army's strong, Mom. And besides, they opened the dikes this afternoon. Flooded everything. I heard it just before the radio went off.
And there's nothing to worry about tonight, Mom.
Our defense line will hold till the British get here.
Sure, and the Germans couldn't get here tonight anyway, Mom.
Go on and eat, dear. Stop talking.
Then nobody said nothing, Eddie. Remember? You could only hear the clock on the mantel ticking. It got louder and louder. It was quiet, like we was all waiting for the dentist. Everybody just looked down at their plates, not eating, or else looked around the room. The crack in the ceiling. Seashell on the table. Mom's old china dog in front of the fireplace. And that clock kept on ticking. All of us kept on saying nothing. Just listening. Listening. And then... then they came, Eddie! Of Brooklyn. Only there wasn't no difference in the streets that morning. They all looked alike. Smashed houses, burning houses, dead houses. The only difference was the German soldiers in the streets everywhere. A German officer and six men were going from ruin to ruin. Soon they came to us. We all stood silent in front of what the night before had been our house. You, Eddie, and me, and Willie, and Mom's old china dog. The Germans knew everything like there was gypsy fortune tellers.
How heck, I'll show the three people lived in this house. A crippled old woman, a girl, and a boy. There's the old woman.
You killed her last night.
Who are you?
A friend of the family.
You are the girl who lives here, and the boy?
Yes.
Yeah.
The girl will report to our headquarters at 3 o'clock. From where she will be sent to a farm to help with the spring plowing. The boy will report to 3:30, from where he will be sent to work in a factory in the Reich.
No, no, I won't do it. I won't do it.
Wait, Willie, don't run away. Come back, wait.
Fire! If a boy doesn't wish to work for the Reich, we see that he doesn't have to work.
That was the first battle of Brooklyn, Eddie. We lost. We were shut out 100-0 like Hubble was pitching.
Michael, what has come over you? I love you, kid, and I always thought you was a little wacky, which was another reason why I love you, but I never heard you talk like that in my whole life. Is there something wrong with you?
There's nothing wrong with me, Eddie. I've just been thinking lately.
Yeah, talking, too. But look, Myrtle, we wasn't in no Battle of Brooklyn, and you know it.
Yes, we were.
How could we be in Brooklyn, Holland, when all the time we are right here on Bedford Avenue, Brooklyn, USA? How could we, huh?
Listen to me, Eddie, and try to get this through your thick head. We was in the first Battle of Brooklyn. All the little people in the world was in it. You and me and Mom and Willie and Sammy Feinschreiber down at the butcher shop. We were all little people. And like I said, all the little people in the world was in that battle.
the Cohens and the Kellys and the Smiths and the Joneses, Joe Jokes and George Selden, all the gentle, beautiful little people. You see, Eddie?
You talk like a merry-go-round.
This is a little guy's war, Eddie. Hitler ain't fighting kings and queens no more. What can a king do? Call up the Waldorf Astoria and ask to speak to the king and they ask you which one. Here, the joint's jumping with him. This is the little guy's war, and all the king's horses and all the king's men can't do nothing about it. We're the only ones that can win it, Eddie. Only us, the little people, all dressed up in our halos and gas masks.
Okay, Myrtle, okay. I believe it. The first battle of Brooklyn is over. But you says when I first come in here, you couldn't go dancing tonight on account of you had to get ready for the second battle of Brooklyn.
That's exactly what I mean. That's why I do all the things I do.
Well, would you just tell me where they're going to have this second battle? Right here in Prospect Park?
How do I know? Maybe it'll be in Brooklyn, Holland again, or in Moscow, or Egypt, or Tokyo, or maybe right here in Prospect Park. But, Eddie, it's going to be the biggest World Series we ever seen. And we got to win this second battle of Brooklyn, even if we got to drag old Jazzy Dance out of the bullpen.
We're going to win a war, all right, Myrtle. Don't get jumpy.
All us little people got to get jumpy, or else we won't. We got to do everything from knitting socks to shooting a gun. This ain't for peanuts and a hot Frank out in the bleachers, Eddie. This is for all or nothing. This is for our life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This is for democracy. This is so the meek, the little people can inherit the earth.
So what do you want I should do? Go on a house-to-house search for hot water bottles?
Sure, if that's all you can do, you don't, but do something.
Now, don't get excited, Myrtle. I just asked you a question.
Don't you see, Eddie? You and me, we ain't never done much for this world, except eating, maybe, and going to Coney and drinking a beer. We ain't never wrote a song. We never even planted a shade tree. Never brought a kid in the world. Maybe we never will, but we gotta make it so other people can in the future. But they won't be able to unless we all win the second battle of Brooklyn. We gotta pray and hope to do it. We gotta work and fight to do it. We gotta give away all our money maybe to do it. And we gotta have the guts to bury our kids with one hand and thumb our nose at Hitler with the other.
Well, that's what I've been saying all the time, ain't it? Buy war saving stamps and lick the other side.
Yeah, that's it, Eddie. Part of it.
And, Myrtle, after it's all over, then will you go dancing with me at Coney?
Sure, Eddie. When they turn the lights back on at Coney and around the world again.
When the lights go back on at Coney Island, then there will be music and dancing and laughter and light for all the little people all over the world again. Because we here in America have pledged ourselves to destroy the evil in the world, which darkens cities and destroys them, and the laughter and the music of the people in them. And we will destroy it at whatever cost. We will work unceasingly. We will fight unyieldingly. And we will save. We must save everything we can, raw materials, food, and money. And we must invest our money in war savings bonds, every penny that we can, every week or every payday. United States Treasury war savings bonds and stamps are your investment in the last great hope for freedom and happiness in the world. Buy them today, as often and as much as you can. They are your investment in the future security of America. Remember, this is your country. Keep it yours.
Well, is your chest bursting with American pride?
American. I'm proud
Merkin.
Of it.
Gotta say Merkin.
Merkin.
In some circles. Merkin.
Merkin. And proud of it. Yep.
Yep. And proud of it. Who's our car dealer? Is that the... Oh, God. Serpentini, isn't it?
Serpentini, yeah.
Is it Serpentini?
It is Serpentini. Yeah, and I've got those. I think the first one was in Wadsworth. There's one up here about a mile halfway, if that far away from me, which I will never go to again because the son was out there yelling at one of the salesmen and didn't realize we were sitting there as customers. Okay.
Well, the guy who got yelled at got the last laugh.
So.
Oh, boy.
Oh, that was fun.
Yeah.
Oh, anyway.
Seriously, though, I mean, I came out of that
story.
With that remark, but Dave, was there ever a time of more patriotism in this country, at least in the last 150 years? Like World War II era?
World War II, no, especially since we have been attacked at Pearl Harbor. Even though Hawaii had not been a state yet, it certainly was a protectorate, and it's where we based a lot of our naval operations at. San Diego, mm-hmm. and then at Pearl Harbor to help with the that
the
side
Pacific.
Of the ocean there.
Yeah.
I think that I don't think there's ever been a time that we have. One moment in time we saw it was at 9-1-1.
I was hoping that would last a lot longer, but apparently not.
It did not, yeah.
I mean, not that... And because, you know, Dave, I've always said this, as many science fiction tales have pointed out, and we've given many, many examples here, sometimes it takes a common enemy to unite people. It's a shame it seems like it has to be that way, but when there's a common evil, I guess that's what it's going to take to unite people.
And then within a year, we're all back to exactly where we were before. It's the same.
Yeah, maybe not even that good as we were before. Possibly. So much for our commentary. The hell do we know? We host a radio show.
Eat your corn.
That's right.
Here.
Nobody takes us seriously.
Yeah, nor should they.
But that's right. We don't even take ourselves seriously. So
no, I don't
that's
recommend
a good thing.
It.
Not,
yeah,
to take,
if you take us seriously,
not to take yourself seriously is a good thing.
Yeah. If you take us seriously, you're setting yourself up for disappointment. We're just going to tell you that straight out.
You are.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we still got time for a non-Vincent filler here, Dale. How about let me take a quick peek here, see if we can hit
well, while we do part. That, do something think? I should have played before the feature.
Lights out.
Okay.
And now the movies, folks.
Oh, I remember the ghoul putting that in the opening credits of every movie he would show, host on Channel 61. Something by Mad Professor. I have no idea the actual original source. Someone does, but I don't.
I don't. I'm not sure who that is either.
It's called Mad Professor. Professor is what I've seen it labeled on various areas, but I've never seen like a vinyl or heard of any like reel-to-reel tapes or anything. I have no idea of the source.
It had to be on vinyl somewhere, but
that's what I'm thinking. Some novelty record out of the 50s or 60s, it seems.
Yeah. Yeah, something that Chuck dug up from somewhere, absolutely.
Possibly
most of
the song 60s.
Of it,
yeah.
There
was a period of the 60s.
Yeah,
Dave,
possibly
if
60s, yeah.
If you remember, there was a period in the 60s where there was like this sudden interest in the 20s and like the silent era and things like that, if you recall.
Right. For instance, like Winchester Cathedral song.
Yeah.
Which is a 20 song, yeah. And I know there were others too, but yeah.
Sure, movies like Thoroughly Modern Millie and all kinds of fun stuff.
And don't forget Tiptoe Through the Tulip.
Yeah, there you go. So a lot of the culture from the 20s and 30s was being revived then. Maybe because a lot of the TV we watched were movies and things from that era. I don't know.
Yeah,
I don't know,
true.
But it was a period of discovery of some early films, early sound films and silent films. Boris Karloff's The Ghoul was considered lost for years and was not recovered until maybe even the early 70s, I think.
Well, and silence had gone long out of fashion, and all of a sudden in the 60s, they were there showing their silence again, especially Harold Lloyd, the third genius.
Yes.
Because he retained the rights to all his films and would only go show them at a certain point where he could kind of help present the theaters, and found them to be widely popular. And,
quite the stuntman. And then you had Buster Keaton running around in the 60s, appearing on Twilight Zone and in a couple of the Frankie Avalon, Nanette Funicello beach movies.
Yeah. With the same classic hat. Yeah.
And relatively active for his age. One of them in the credits, he does some dance, and it's pretty incredible. He's still pretty fairly limber.
Considering all the smoking that man did. Stayed extremely limber, and I think it was eventually cancer that did take him.
Yeah, he's still one of my heroes. Not for the smoking necessarily, but maybe.
Back then in the 50s, everybody smoked, you know?
Yes.
You saw him doing it on I Love Lucy, you know?
Yeah, now you got to wonder what they're smoking.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
You know, it could be cloves. I don't know. Gar used to say, so,
it could
me,
be.
He used to smoke cloves
it.
Cigarettes.
It could be.
Gar used to tell me.
So, what's going on tomorrow night on Eerie House Radio?
Nothing. An hour and a half. 90 minutes of silence.
Oh,
no, I shouldn't curse.
By the library?
No. It's It's part two of the Vincent Price double feature drive-in, another Lux Radio Theater. A good story. I've only seen the movie for the first time probably in the last 5 years, and it's called Laura, kind of a very suspenseful crime drama starring the great one, Vincent Price. Gene Tierney is back, and Dana Andrews, as the detective. Is that right, Dave?
Yes. Dana Andrews is back as a detective. And tomorrow, as we start the show, I'll tell you how I first saw it as a play and where I first saw it. And let me tell you, the play itself is just as enthralling as the movie. It's the story that's that good. The story is amazing, even as a play. That's for tomorrow.
It is. It's an intriguing tale. I saw it probably somewhere on Roku. And I'm like, all right, Vincent Price, I got to watch this. And it just drew me right. The story drew me right in.
Yes. Yeah. It's an amazing tale, which we will share with everyone, with three of the original cast. And maybe even Gail Gordon. You never know, you know?
Yeah. You can pop right in like you did today without us being the wiser until
without us even noticing it.
Yep. But we want to thank you for joining us live, Fogsbane, GGSI Paper, good old Bob, folks that we can't see, folks that listen to us in the archives. Stick around because we're going to be back after a good night from our hero.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him.
Put the speakers
when
back.
When next we meet in Frankenstone. Don't come alone.
And get that kid out of your trunk.
And you
smell.
Dig it.
Okay, my shovel. I'm ready to dig
it. There we go. Wasn't timed too poorly.
Yeah, pretty close.
Pretty close. Half a second, 2 seconds, somewhere in there. I'll take it after some of the faux pas I have had in the past.
Yeah.
Either through my own fault or
show tonight.
It was a great
fun show. Fun
show,
as we all are. And hopefully we all got to learn a bit about things. That's the fun thing. You know, and Dale, that's what I always do. Whenever I tell anybody about Erie House, I say it's a little bit of fact, a little bit of fun, and a whole lot of old-time radio. And I think we do that very well here.
Very, very well. Yes, we do. And we'll keep doing it and doing it. As long as these shows keep popping out, it's been quite a while, been quite a ride, and we haven't duplicated anything with no real plans to anytime soon. I mean, if someone requests it, that's great. We'll do it. But we'll just keep bringing out more and more strange new tales.
Yep. And upon occasion, we will present the same story, but done by a different show. And therefore,
it is fun to compare like a Dimension X versus an X minus one, I think.
Yep. Or, you know, when they take that script and from Escape, put it on the Suspense, that kind of a thing, or vice versa, you know?
Yep. Yeah, it's fun to hear the different cast interpretations.
Because I'll tell you what, Dale, we have played your favorite version of Three Skeleton Key with Vincent Price, and I love it. But there's one that I have that I even enjoy more. I have it on LP, and it's just, to me, the story is just a little bit different than with Vincent Price doing it, and I really, really like it. So one of these days, I'm going to share that one with you so you can kind of compare the Escape with Vincent Price to the Escape with I didn't even recognize the guy's name. It just, they had such great radio actors on Escape.
Well, why don't we just share it with the audience as well? I mean, Dave, we can just command them to go back and listen in the archives to compare. Command them.
Command them. I command thee.
I
can. Go to archive.
No, it might be fun. Kidding aside, it might be fun for them to go back and then compare what a version. Yeah. They should do it.
Yep. We will do that. We will do that.
That sounds like fun. I like to share that with the audience as well. I like a good shivering tale. Whoever
does. Maybe I'll find a few different versions of some of the stories we've done, and we can guide them back to the other ones, and they can tell us which ones they like better.
Yeah, a repeat, not repeat weekend.
Yeah, okay, I like that.
There you go. Give you another category. Look at that.
There we go.
Oh, we forgot to rement. Well, we got to make a point of mentioning tomorrow night what we're doing for good old Bob. That's coming up next weekend, too.
Yep. He made a suggestion of a weekend of science gone bad or gone wrong. And that. So that'll be next weekend.
Yes, yes, yes. And I've got a nice long weekend here to prepare for it. hope everyone has an enjoyable Memorial Day weekend. Hopefully you got Monday off, Dave.
Yeah, basically I do. I think I'm going to do some extra work on Sunday so I can take a Monday off.
I think you should. You deserve it. I'm going to burn me some burgers and brats, and the wife's making some pasta salad.
You know, we've been talking about burning some meat ourselves out there, so.
Our infamous what do we call them? Oh, heart stoppers, we call them.
Heart stoppers, yeah.
Heart stoppers. You eat one, they're loaded with garlic and onion. You know, she mixes that into the meat, so it just cooks right with the meat on there. We make them pretty thick, and you feel like you got punched in the chest after you eat one or two of them, especially two of them.
Yep. But it's always good to go with a smile on your face.
Oh. What was that one place they called the Heart Attack Grill? Was that in Arizona or New Mexico somewhere?
Yeah. Something like that, yeah. One of those two places, yeah.
They have like a 2-pound hamburger or some crazy thing like that. And if you can eat it and live, they give you another one so that you don't live.
I'll finish you off, yes.
the staff, the girls, they had dressed up as nurses, you know. It sort of made mockery of the health decision of slamming hamburgers.
Yep.
But it's an American tradition.
So much for those dinky little sliders, man. These are real hamburgers.
Heart stoppers. It's the good stuff. I think.
I like kind of medium. The wife likes hers burnt to a crisp. Where do you end up in that category there?
I like mine, just medium well, I guess you'd say. Just a hint of pink, if that. Or where starts turning brown all the way through. That's how I like my burgers. Pretty like much how I like, mostly I like steak.
Okay.
I like a little
bit of red in there. I have a friend who just says, just turn it a little.
Just turn it a little?
Yeah. Just hurt it a little, yeah. Hurt it a little.
Run it through a warm
room.
So
send it through here. I'll grab it with my fork as it was walking by, you know.
Yeah.
That's the way he likes it.
Run it through a warm room. That's all you got to do. Oh, my goodness. Now, there is a point where it's a little too rare for me. But, if I don't complain at a restaurant if it's a bit more rare than I expected. It's like, yeah, it's meat. What the hell?
I worked at a York Steakhouse when they were around here. I don't know if you had any where you were.
We did. I liked them. They were okay. They were comparable to a Ponderosa.
Yeah, kind of like that. Anyway, we had a guy on the cook. It was, he was a manager, assistant manager, and he constantly, if somebody wanted it well done, he constantly sent it out early so they would, you know, get it quicker. And they said, "What? They want it well done." He said, "Almost nobody sends it back, you know." So that was the justification for sending it out the way he didn't want it. Really?
Yeah. They never send it back. Yeah, because they're dead. You gave them raw meat.
Got worms. Yes.
Worms. A delicacy in some countries.
And by fish. Maybe it's those fish that Vincent Price washed in a dish or cooked in a dishwasher.
Yeah. And our turtle gets worms to eat. I was going to say has worms. That sounds terrible. No. Did you have your
turtle? The turtles
worm?
Don't have enough
trouble. No, I did not. Yeah, we found him in the backyard, Dave, in about 2001, 2002, and he's still going strong, this turtle.
Turtles have an unbelievable life.
Yeah. Oh, especially when they get to fly through Tokyo. That's fun. Camera.
Camera. I always like camera movies.
I think I was being a bit too much of a highbrow with horror when I was younger because I was a really famous monsters junkie. And that and my love for like Harryhausen and effects like that, I didn't hold them in very high regard, but now I enjoy them a lot more that I'm older.
I mean, Gamera could pull in his legs and go out in space and, you know, have shoot rockets out his legs so he could, you know, get places around. That's cool.
Yeah. I was thinking of the time Ron Swede, somebody sent him a Gamera model. He put a couple skyrockets in its where the legs go, you know, when he tracked his legs and fly. He shot it across the studio and almost burned the place down. They went to the commercial and you could hear the crew laughing and running because you know, like the scene behind him fell and everything like that. But it was funny. That was a 70s skit. That was like a mid-70s skit. Back on old WKDF. Channel 61. Were you here in the 70s then? You remember Channel 61?
Yeah, I was here in the 70s. We moved in back here in 60, well, to Northeast Ohio in 60, or 72.
Channel 61 had some guy with a puppet, or not a puppet, a ventriloquist dummy. Do you remember that? Early on in 61, or on Channel 61. Yeah, I can't remember the details.
Yeah, what was, I'm trying to think. You know, Dale, I went to, maybe we should share this tomorrow, because we'll have some extra time, a little bit extra time tomorrow. I went to the Dan O'Shannon documentary on Cleveland's children's.
I saw that. So sad that I missed that until after it was over.
And I tell you what, it was at the Cinematheque at the Cleveland Art Institute, Institute of Art guy. It was only the sixth time in their history they've actually sold out a movie showing.
I'm kicking myself. That had to be so cool. It was all about early kids' TV shows here in Cleveland.
Yep. And going back to clear back to Uncle Jake's and stuff that happened at the very beginning of Cleveland television up to, I guess, basically the last leave would have been Barnaby when he left the second time.
Yeah.
And even showed clips of that last show when he was saying goodbye and how choked up and emotional Lynn Sheldon was saying that for the last time.
Yeah. Well, he truly enjoyed doing that.
He did, but he didn't. And that's one of the things I found out about, because for everything that he did with as Barnaby, he did two things as Lynn Sheldon, going out and doing plays around town and things like that. He had a hard time dealing with Barnaby up until after he retired, and then even his biography is called Barnaby and Me, not Me and Barnaby, Barnaby and Me.
But
he did have trouble with that because he was the one, and his young childhood was just unbelievable, how he, by age of six, he was orphaned, living, sleeping nights in people's porches. Was really cold or bad weather, he'd slide into their cars and close the doors. So he, you know, getting to the point where he was the king of kids television. Really, really interesting. They're going to offer it to Channel 3 first, and they're going to have to cut things out. But I think ultimately Dan may put it on YouTube because he just wants people to see this.
Good. I want to see it. I am so sorry I missed that.
And there are so many people in Cleveland, from Cleveland, that aren't here anymore that would really, really love to see this. And so, I was really glad.
As the man said, don't miss it if you can.
Don't miss it if you can. That's right.
He used to say that. I think, Bob Wells used to say that, no? Somebody.
He was one of several people that used to say it. But, yeah, he was one of them.
Don't miss it if you can.
So, yeah, maybe I'll talk a little bit more about that tomorrow.
I hope so. And we'll have time. We'll have time. We got Laura, and then us.
And one interesting thing about that is, because Dan and Shannon was answering questions afterwards, well, we sat in the second row, and the person sitting in front of us, like two people to our left, it was the daughter of the romper, and she had both the magic mirrors with her.
Oh, no.
Miss Barbara. It was Miss Barbara's daughter, and she was there, and she brought the magic mirrors with her.
Oh, no. Oh, God. Denise is going to be very upset that she missed this, too. I have to share this with her. I forgot to mention it when I first saw it, so. This is Katie's.
But it was sold out. Mike Mace encouraged me to make sure you buy your ticket ahead of time. They say it may sell out. I said, really? So I went ahead and ordered my ticket on Sunday, and it was, you know, Tuesday showing. And I hitched a ride up with him and Karen. And what an experience that was. And then we stuck around and even talked to Dan O'Shannon a little bit afterwards. And Mike kind of said, hey, maybe you could be on, you know, I had a rocket on my thing, on something we have. And Dan looks at my shirt. You mean like Spaceship One?
Yeah, it's a perfect fit.
Here's a guy that wrote for Hollywood, and he'd be willing to do a Spaceship One episode, you know?
That's pretty cool. Way to go, Dave.
All right. Well, hey, I think it's time to bring in that guy with the big nose, close out the show tonight, and we'll all be back here tomorrow or in a few minutes if you're in the archive for the exciting example of Erie House Radio. So come on out, James.
Good night.
Good night,
ladies, in my car.
It's time to say good night.
Good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
She's over here.
Sorry, Mrs. Calabash.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night. Thank you.